Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to Gnip Gnup. I'm Greg Gnip. Of course, that makes me the Gnip of Gnip Gnup, and that's Chris Yuzinski, my buddy.
How are you, buddy?
And he's the Gnup. So how are you today? You doing good?
I got to tell you, I'm so excited. So excited about our next guest who's on the show today. And he's actually a person who influenced me to play double bass when I was a kid. In high school, in the last string program that was actually done down here, because I had to play Age of Consent, you know?
Oh, totally. And see, and I came from a little bit of a different way around, where I have a sister who's older than me, and she was like, you have to hear this band. And then she went, but then you've got to listen to this band. And of course, we're talking Joy Division, we're talking New Order. And then, of course, I got into Monaco, and now... It's, I guess we should be honest and tell people who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Peter Hook.
Joining us live from Toronto, landed.
And now his newest thing is Peter Hook and the Light.
Yes. Hooky, welcome.
Congratulations. Hiya. And welcome.
To Gnip Gnup.
And here I am in bed nude.
Well, that's good. Just we just have our shirts on.
I'd never say, boys.
So, you know, how's the tour going? I mean, we're coming out of COVID. We're supposedly all opened up. You're just starting your leg of your North American tour. And how's it going?
It's going fine. I think that the chaos that has been left behind is still having massive repercussions. We were 4 hours delayed. The luggage took 2 hours to come out. Things like that, which I suppose in a funny way, we've over the years taken it for granted that these things run pretty smoothly. And then to get to this point where they don't, on a 26-city tour, it does fill me with a little bit of dread of having to go through that nearly every day as a touring band. You know, I mean, the main problem... is the lack of sleep. You know, in the old days, it used to be self-inflicted, the lack of sleep. But now, generally, it's other people that stop us sleeping. It just means that we have to set out earlier. The shows finish at the normal time. So it means just getting less and less sleep. And it becomes a bit of an avalanche over a while. But we will have to see. You know, I mean, the thing is that we're all here. This is our 10th North American tour in 12 years. So we are aware of, you know, the pitfalls, shall we say. So, yeah, it's good. We're all in a very positive state of mind. All the boys were at breakfast with me earlier. And, yeah, there's only one of them that hadn't slept. So, yeah, we're okay. We're sort of muddling through. And I fully expect us to be 100%.
Awesome.
See, and the one thing that I love about your tour, because I've had a chance to see you a couple of times as Peter Hook and the Light. One of my favorite things about your tour, though, is you're making so many people my age so happy. There's, you know, because there's a couple of guys in the crowd that might be maybe not quite in the best of shape. And I've watched them, you know, dancing through a song and halfway through having to bend over to catch their breath. Give them a few seconds and start up again. So you're doing a great job for getting some of us some exercise.
Well, I mean, I'm a great believer in it in myself. You know, I mean, I learned the hard way, of course, when I got to the point where I was very, very unfit. And yeah, I mean, now, to be honest with you, I'm probably fitter than I ever have been in my life, which is... absolutely ridiculous at the, you know, the ripe old age of 66.
Are you still running?
Yeah, I do 3 10Ks a week.
Nice, nice. What kind of pace are you doing? I do a running show.
11 kilometers is my pace. But yeah, I mean, the only thing I have to watch, though, is because the shows are so long, and because of that, they're quite energetic. I have to watch when I'm working, as I am doing now, that I don't do any running, really, because it brings my immune system down. And then I get prone to colds. And I had pneumonia 3 times on the last tour that we did, which was of North America and then Australia. And I got scarring on my lungs because of that. Because I was fit, I got through it.
Right.
But I did get pneumonic scarring. So over COVID, I've had to be very, very careful. And, you know, again, it's the big problem is that because the COVID numbers are still so high, whilst COVID may not be killing us anymore, you know, for considering we're going to a different city every day,
right,
it means that we're not going to be able to say hello to a lot of old friends because we just, you're just trying to limit your risk.
Right.
You know, I mean, you have the problem at breakfast. There was a guy coughing next to me this morning and I was like, oh, Jesus, man. You know, I would rather he farted than coughed, to be honest. But, so, yeah, you know, there's that fright that it's left you with. And the thing is that we've worked hard to get here and we don't want to let people down in the other 25 cities. So, yeah, we're having to be careful, particularly with friends, sadly. You know, we're not going to be able to meet friends. So I do hope that people will understand that, which is a great shame, you know, because it used to be one of the nicest things about touring was meeting old friends in old places. So, yeah, you know, the changes are there and there is a responsibility, you know.
There is.
But one of the things I like about what you're doing, so maybe people won't be able to meet and greet and do things like that, but they can still get your autograph if they buy some of your swag at the concerts. I saw the post that you were signing.
Yeah, we did all those.
Which I think is absolutely brilliant. I think that's how long did that take you to sign hoodies and T-shirts and posters? And
that
must have been a day and a half or 2 days before the tour started.
9 hours. Yeah, I came early to do them. We've worked with Kill the Eight, Toronto firm, many times before. And we've got a great, great working relationship. So yeah, I mean, the reason I do it, I suppose, is to say thank you to the people that have supported me. Because when I decided to do what I did outside of New Order, specifically when New Order split up in 2007, there was a lot of skepticism about what I was doing. And you know, the thing is that people have been won over. They realize that they can trust you. And so, yeah, it's my way of saying, yeah, thank you, you know, for that trust. It's like a personal touch that I think is very important.
You know, it's amazing to me that very few people in the world have ever seen Joy Division play live.
It's true, yeah.
But yet, you know, I got to say, they're more popular today than ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great testament to the music. And, you know, the reason that I'm here is that I'm celebrating Ian Curtis's legacy and his life. Because one thing I noticed when we were New Order together, we never celebrated anything to do with Joy Division. And once I was outside of that bubble, shall we say, and, you know, the bubble had burst, I thought, why have we never celebrated anything? When the band finished in 1980 and has risen to stratospheric levels in the 40 years since, it just seemed bizarre. Now, I am aware that very, very few people have seen Joy Division. And to be honest with you, Joy Division on record are a lot, Joy Division live are a lot different to Joy Division on record.
Right.
Right. So the thing is that I was aware that I was not Joy Division. I did not want to pretend to be Joy Division. I'll leave that to other, nameless people who pretend to be something they're not. So the thing is that to find a way of playing the music and celebrating my legacy and, you know, Ian's life, I stole the idea, funnily enough, from Bobby Gillespie when he was talking about Screamadelica. He was talking about how he wished that Primal Scream had played other songs from the LP instead of the ones that they did.
Okay.
And he said, oh, you know, but you couldn't play them all. And I thought, hang on a minute, why can't you play them all? Why can't you celebrate the LP? And I thought, that's it. I'll play the LP and I will recreate the sound and Martin Hannett's input, the producer, as much as I can, because that's what people have heard. And that way I won't be committing the mortal sin of pretending to be the group or impersonating the group. So I suppose in a way I'm celebrating the record in the way that I think it should have sounded, maybe.
Well, you
a little bit more ballsier, a little bit more upfront. Martin Hannett did a great job of making a wonderful atmosphere on that record. But I always wish the bass had been a bit louder. You know, and so maybe it's definitely my interpretation of that idea. And I was amazed when I played a gig last week in Cardiff in England, and Bobby Gillespie was there playing Screamadelica in full.
Wow.
So I was like, wow. Now that just shows you how wheels turn,
right?
You know, and things. And I must admit that now playing LPs in full has become very popular with a lot of musicians. And I did get my greatest backhanded compliment recently when the bass player from Nirvana is now playing Nirvana's LP in full. And a certain reviewer, who shall remain nameless, was doing a review of the idea of it. He hadn't heard him play it. And he opened with the line of, "I blame Peter Hook for this." And I thought, yes.
You touched upon Ian Curtis a bit. What do you think Ian would say, you know, 40 years after the release of Unknown Pleasures and Closer, and, well, 42 years after his passing?
Ian's ambition that he always talked about whenever we were sat there together was how we were going to tour the world and take our music everywhere. It seemed to be his greatest wish. And judging by how excited he was on the eve of that North American tour in 1980, I can't imagine what made him change his mind. But I mean, you know, the thing about mental illness and the thing about a suicidal feeling is that unless you've been there and saved yourself, you can't imagine it, can you? So I can't imagine what happened that night. I mean, I have a theory, but so the thing is that he always used to sit there and he would wind us up, go, just imagine what it's going to be like, Hookie, when we're playing in Brazil, when we're playing in America, when we're playing in Los Angeles, the Doors, just think of it, CBGB's, New York, just imagine it, okay. And I'd be like, yeah, yeah. And of course, cruelly, we never got to go to any of those places. So the thing is that I do have this little ritual wherever I go anywhere, I always go, this is for you, mate. This is for you. All the places that we never got to when we were Joy Division. And there's been a few, my God, from Mongolia to, God, you name it, in the world. We have taken Joy Division's music to some wonderful places. And I remember the first gig that we had in Mexico, first time that we'd ever played Joy Division in Mexico. And it was in Tijuana, and it was in this little club that had no windows. And the whole sound was just bursting out in the street in downtown Tijuana. And it was like a dream come true, you know, to hear Warsaw or to hear Interzone, these songs blasting out in a Mexican town. I just thought, fuck me, Ian would be delighted beyond compare to get us here, because it was his greatest wish, you know. So I do that. I mean, I've got into this habit of visiting his grave a lot because I'm very lucky in that I know where Ian is buried. So I can go and we share a few moments, and we have done over the years, because I'm very grateful for being able to come here and play this wonderful music, because I've found my perfect niche. When I was in, you know, in my band, New Order, the others didn't have a wish to play most of the old music, which I could never understand. And yeah, it broke my heart. It really did. So the thing is that to be able now to have the freedom to not only play Joy Division wherever and whenever I like, I also have the freedom to do the same with New Order's immense back catalogue and do the same thing, because there was a certain economy, shall we say, that was shown. So yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, I'm with the right people.
Yep.
You know, I love it. I'm so proud of it. And with other people that love it. And to be honest with you, I really couldn't ask for anything else.
Yeah,
but I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
How the hell did you play Age of Consent on the double bass? That must have been difficult.
Yeah, but I was just beginning. Like, it was just, I was just trying to find the tune.
Yeah, man. I don't envy you that one.
So, you know, just a couple questions about the older music. I mean, you know, in substance, you know, I walk away from that book thinking you were an absolute workhorse. You were so engaged in being in the band, writing the music, helping to produce most of the music and engineer most of the music as well. And at the same time, you drove the van. You're the guy who actually, you know, reconciled all the customs paperwork. Like, I mean, you were like such an integral part of that organization in that band. And I got the sense that you always wanted to be on tour with the fans, playing the music, really enjoying yourself. And a lot of that didn't happen from the rest of the organization.
No. But I mean, you know, one thing I've sort of learned is that everybody's different. So, you know, the thing is that I did learn quite early on that, you know, making people play and the reaction you got when you did do that wasn't worth it, which is detailed in the book. And it's just life's gift to you, isn't it? It gives with one hand. Here's a wonderful back catalogue and fantastic music that millions of people around the world want to hear. And then it takes away with the other and go, but your lead singer won't play it. You know, but life is like that. And I sort of admired the others, actually, for, you know, doing what they believed in. That was what they wanted to do. And I suppose it was a part of the thing that, you know, the two were never going to meet. But I must say that even them have actually probably gigged more in their 50s and 60s than they ever did in their 30s and 40s. So, yeah, you have to sort of wonder. Yeah, I don't know. It's a very strange thing, but, you know, bands are like that, aren't they? Right. God, man, the history of music. I mean, I do find it amazing that we're actually still fighting tooth and nail. Even at this present moment. So since New Order split up in 2007, we have never stopped fighting.
I thought that was reconciled.
We've got the happiest bunch of lawyers in the world.
I'm sorry, I thought that was all reconciled a couple of years ago.
No, nothing was reconciled, actually. It was settled, the actions, but nothing was reconciled. So, yeah, we're still, you know, happily exchanging letters.
Oh,
and getting nowhere. And I do, it looks like it's going to become a fight to the death. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, as fans, we're really sorry to hear that because it hurts the music.
There's nothing sorrier than the lack of communication that we have, I think, which is the problem. But I mean, I don't know. It's just very, very difficult. You know, I'd love to be able to sit here and say, yeah, it was reconciled. Good luck, lads and ladies.
I mean, if you want, I've got a good divorce lawyer.
Mate, is he? I bet he's not as happy as our lawyers. They've all got Maybachs.
Oh, yikes. Ours.
Never mind Mercedes. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, carry on arguing. This is great. I'm just off to the Maldives again.
Oh, yoy, yoy.
Our lawyers are always in the Maldives.
Yikes. Do you still have your studio? Studio Sweet 16?
Sweet 16, no. It became, because I was so busy touring, it didn't, I mean, funnily enough, it was actually, studios were able to make money when I got it out. But my partner, who was a surgeon, actually, in England, Naru Hira, a wonderful man, he pioneered laser treatment and use of lasers in operations in England. He was a really spectacular man. I sold it to his son, and his son took it over, and his son, Sean here, now does the sound for New Order.
Oh, yeah, interestingly enough.
You just can't trust anyone, can you?
That's right. Hooky, are you working with any new bands? You did a lot of producing and did a lot of, you know, working on tracks with different organizations and bands over the last 40 years.
I managed to do a lot of collaborations, which is good fun. I do miss the group writing machine, if you like.
Right.
You know, the fact of being in a group where you have to do a new record. I mean, with New Order, it got to every 6 or 7 years. But I mean, I tend to work a lot faster than that. So I do a lot of collaborations. I've got offered one last week, actually, which was quite good, by Rusty Egan. You know, Rusty used to be in Rich Kids and Visage, and I did a track with him for his solo LP a while back, and we're doing a new track together, which was really interesting. I was really excited about it. I've also got a lot of things on the go. I mean, it's been a little bit odd with COVID, because I noticed that a lot of musicians were very fired up by the inactivity and started to record a lot.
Right.
And I also noticed that a lot of musicians like me were completely depressed with the whole thing and just did nothing. But on the bright side, I did get to sort out my sock drawer, which I've been looking at for 39 years and thinking I must get round to sorting that sock drawer out. So now all my socks are in pairs.
Except for the one. Except for that one, right?
You know, so yeah, there were some positive aspects to COVID, but I mean, you know, it's still cast a shadow. We lost a grandfather. Jack's grandfather got COVID and died very early, and you know, the whole repercussions of not being able to go to the funeral,
right,
being able to grieve properly and pay your respects was horrible. Yeah, so it's been an awful time. And England, as we were talking about earlier, everywhere, I think, is struggling to find that bit of equilibrium. You know, that we'll get back to it eventually. I think, if anything, we sort of took advantage and took it for granted how easy things were before.
Right.
And all of a sudden, when they've got difficult, you know, then you're going, oh, what the hell? I'm used to doing everything easily. You know, they're all first world problems, aren't they? But I do think England is in such a mess politically, it's almost a joke. And I think that the financial repercussions are going to cause a lot of problems because of COVID and Ukraine and bad government. You know, I think that we are setting ourselves up for a bad winter.
Well,
so, yes, us musicians playing our merry tunes and diverting people's... you know, troubles for half an hour or an hour, or in our case, 3 hours, hopefully will become and always stay important.
Your show has a opening set of New Order tunes.
Yeah.
And then you actually play most of Unknown Pleasures and Closer?
All of Unknown Pleasures. All of Closer.
Wow.
And then we do an encore. I know you're supposed to get encores, but because the singles weren't on the albums,
correct,
we're able to play them separately, you see. So that was a good bit of planning on our part. The New Order set came about simply, actually it was the other way around, when we played Joy Division and then moved to New Order, because my ambition is to play every song that I have written and recorded before I go off to join Ian, if you like. And I'm well on the way with that journey. But when we finished Joy Division albums and we moved into New Order, I thought, oh man, I don't want to lose Joy Division. I thought, now we're playing New Order albums, how can I keep Joy Division?
Right.
So I thought, ah, that's a good idea. We'll play a warm-up support band, because originally the support band to Peter Hook and the Light playing New Order was the Slaves of Venus, which was the name that Joy Division turned down.
Oh.
Luckily for us.
Yeah, I would think so.
So we supported ourselves as the Slaves of Venus playing Joy Division material. And then when we were playing Joy Division LPs, we supported ourselves as the Witch Doctors of Zimbabwe, which was the name that New Order turned down.
Correct.
To become New Order, you see. So, and it enabled me to keep the music. You know, I lived so long in New Order without most of our music that I'm damned if I'm going to let it go now. So, you know, so I'm very happy to change the set and play all such an amazing back catalogue. I mean, when I came to play New Order, we went on the internet and found out that we hadn't actually played Age of Consent as New Order.
Really?
For something like 27 years. And I was like, where did that go? We've not played Age of Consent for 27 years. I couldn't believe it myself.
Wow.
You know,
and that just blows my mind out. Because to me, there are some songs from New Order that are just absolutely classics. And then when you say Age of Consent for 27 years, that absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah, it blew mine, mate. Unbelievably, Greg. I could not believe it. And you know what? I just stood there and I thought, well, this is never happening again.
Good for you.
If I have to go and busk on Market Street, I'm going to play these bloody songs.
But how do you, if I can just interrupt, like, but with that crazy amount of songs to choose from, how do you just, you don't know that, you know, you how do you just decide? Is it just throw a dart and go, listen, we got to play this song? Just because you've got so many great songs and there's so many songs that, you know, there's the singles that everybody knows, but on New Order albums, there's always a song or two that's just a crazy
and some gem. great B-sides as well.
Yeah, like where you're, I used to DJ in the clubs a lot, and I mean, to be honest with you, sometimes I would take a B-side and go, I'm going to use this one more than I use the single.
Yeah. So how do you decide
what to pick to play?
It's quite interesting with B-sides, because as a musician, when you've finished all the A's, you tend to actually relax when you're doing the B's and certainly enjoy it a lot more. And because of that relaxation, some of the B's actually turn out to be better than your A's. You know, that's what I used to love about buying a single in the old days, you know, Rolling Stones, Fleetwood Mac, whatever. And you put it on, and then you'd put the B-side on, in the Kinks in particular. And then the B-side would be a fantastic song as well. You know, so I was quite happy that New Order were able to do that. I mean, the person I have to thank actually for our very studious non-ignorance of our songs is my son, because my son researches it. He's a massive fan. He's very, very studious in that approach. And he says to me, Dad, we've got to do this. We've not done this. Dad, we've got to do this. We've not done this for ages. So he is my wingman in that respect. And as you can imagine, I was devastated to lose him to Smashing Pumpkins when Billy came along, played with us a couple of times and stole me son, the bugger. So, yeah, but I'm immensely proud of watching him play with the success that Smashing Pumpkins have.
That's Jack Hook, right?
Yeah, well, it's called Jack Bates.
Oh, actually. Jack, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, he's been playing now with the Smashing Pumpkins for 7 years, which actually surprised me. So he comes back to us when he can, and then he goes off with the Pumpkins when he has to go. So I've sort of got used to being without him some of the time.
In the family business?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it's amazing, even from my point of view, to think that my son is, as you know, as celebrated as he is, I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. You know, he's actually much technically better than I am, if you like. I'm a bit more unpredictable and a bit more slipshod than he is. He is very, very, very good, very good tonally, where I'm not. You know, I mean, I remember when I was fifth in line for the Rolling Stones gig. And everybody was going, oh, Hookie, you're up for the Rolling Stones, fantastic. And I was like, oh, my God. I thought, if Mick Jagger comes along and puts a gun to my head and goes, play Satisfaction, I'd have to go, Mick, shoot. Because there's no way that I could do it. I'm just not built in that. I can't play other people's songs, you know. I'm just not like that. Whereas my son is brilliant at that as well, you know, as playing his own. So yeah, it would be. I'm a much different animal to Jack in the way that we hear the bass, not particularly play it. He's the only person that can play, I've heard, that can play exactly like me.
Well, are those some of your influences that you just named, by the way, the Rolling Stones? Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, it's from a bass playing point of view. The first bass line that ever struck me was by Carol Kaye, and it was Just My Imagination. That was the first time it sort of stuck out from that. But even that was years before I went to see the Sex Pistols.
Yep.
And became a bass player by default, because I didn't even know that a bass had four strings. When I went to buy a bass and the guy gave me a bass, I said, hang on, mate, me mate's bass has got six strings. And he said, that's because your mate's got a guitar knobhead. and this is a bass. And I went, oh, right, okay. So, you know, I couldn't imagine a more reluctant bass player than I was. And really, we were, after seeing the Sex Pistols, we decided that the only lineup for a band was one bass, one guitar, drums, singer, you know, and more or less stuck to that right the way through. So, yeah, it's quite, it's amazing how you drop into these things, isn't it?
It really is. And frankly, you reinvented the bass and the way people hear the bass. And then, of
yeah,
course...
I mean, I was lucky, yeah. As my mother said, you know, you need a gimmick, R. Peter. So I found a gimmick, but I must admit that that gimmick came about quite simply because my bass speaker was awful. And when I played low, I couldn't hear anything. And Barney's guitar amp, he had a Vox UD30 that was used by the Beatles, which is a fantastic amp. Just by chance, he came across it. It sounded so much better than mine did. And the only time I could hear myself was when I played high on the bass, on the high strings. And every time I played high, Ian would literally turn round and go, okay, that sounds great. Do that again. So every time we started playing, his first utterance was, okay, play high. And I'm going, right, mate, whoa. Yeah, so it was actually as simple as that. Through, you know, concentrating on playing high. Of course, I was very lucky to get 24 hours, She's Lost Control,
yeah.
Insight. Oh, my God, you know, I have been blessed by the god of bass riffs, without a shadow of a doubt, yeah.
Yeah, I know we got to wrap up real quickly. I visited the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a number of years ago in Ohio, and there is a display for Joy mm-hmm. Division and New Order there. I actually reached out to them a couple weeks ago saying, like, what is it going to take to get, you know, Joy Division or New Order in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or at least get nominated? Of course, nobody wanted to comment on air or officially on that. Where are we at with that? I mean, like, do Greg and I have to go down to Cleveland and start a petition going? And
yeah,
I will stand in front of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with my shirt off.
You better get them to build a boxing ring as well.
I mean,
or a wrestling ring. Come on.
I mean, I can think of,
or even a MMA.
I can really think of few organizations and bands that don't have the influence of Joy Division that are already inside the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, granted, you're a UK-based band. You didn't have a lot of record sales at the time, right? I mean, like those factors kind of play in. But when it comes to influence, and still influencing today, I find it incredible.
I mean, if I'm going to joke apart,
yeah.
The point is that the fracas between us is so intense that anybody who is trying to give us something, some kind of accolade, knows that it's impossible for them to meet. So, and the others and their management are very well aware that as long as this argument goes on, and it is, as I said to you before, it is still very, very raw and very angry, that those things just cannot happen,
right?
You know, because you can't get any, you know, if the other three went up for it, then I'd be kicking the door down going, you rotten bastards, you know, what about me? And like Cinderella.
Right, right. No.
Leaving me shoe on the stairs and me Doc Martin on the stairs.
So hopefully one day when we fix the internal politics, we can maybe get you guys some accolades.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I say, and I keep saying to the other members that I am, you know, here, I'm willing to talk, I'm willing to do the whatever it takes for us all to get on with our lives, actually. Because I said to you before, you know, my best mate, Twinny, he said to me not long ago, he said, my God, he said, one of you lot is going to be in the grave.
Yeah.
And that seems, after all that we've achieved, an awful, awful shame. Because you shouldn't have to go through your twilight years with something that angry hanging over you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know what it takes. You know, I honestly don't know what it takes to stop it. be, you know, you've got New Order coming soon. Maybe you'll do an interview with them when they're on their Rewound tour with the Pet Shop Boys. Yeah, maybe you can ask them.
Yeah.
I've no idea what's happening, and I've not spoken to any of them for 11 years.
Jeez.
So, yeah, but all I do is get these ridiculous legal letters over and over again. Just, you know, it's like a mad... Yeah, it's awful. It's an awful predicament. It really is.
And
families must be pissed off with it in the same way that we are. But yeah, it's like a fight to the death.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that gets resolved sometime soon. I know that you are in Toronto and Montreal. You're in Detroit on Monday at the Royal Oak Music Theater, and then continuing on the rest of your U.S. tour. Hooky, will you come back and talk about the Hacienda book and what you're doing at the universities, teaching students about being musicians and business?
Yeah.
That whole thing I find absolutely fascinating.
It'd be an absolute pleasure. I mean, I never want anyone to make the mistakes that I've made.
Right.
So it's very important. The education is very, very important. And I must admit that I've actually been sat here looking at you two without hearing your golden voices for how long now is this? Now that we've found how to do it, lads.
Yes.
We should keep it up, shouldn't we?
Absolutely. And we'd love to talk about the Hacienda. What most people don't know, you're also at a university in England doing some work with musicians.
Yeah, we do a master's degree in England for music and music management.
Correct.
My idea with that was that I see so many education institutions who teach but don't teach in any practical level.
Correct.
So all their students have learned everything in the classroom. With our master's course, you actually come along to my club and you take part. There's a big difference to dealing with an irate drug dealer at midnight in a club, actually, and redoing it in a classroom. And also putting a band on the road and dealing with the day-to-day running of it. The students do that with Peter Hook and the Light. It's been a very popular course. And that hands-on approach, I think, means that when they can go to anywhere for any job and someone says, have you got experience? Because that's always the big bugbear.
Yep.
You can be very studious. You can pass your exams. But if you've got no experience, well, with our course, they can say yes. I had to work in his bloody club. I had to look after his bloody band. I was like a slave to him.
Yep.
But again, it's practical experiences, which, as we know, lads, looking at my face and your two faces, we've had much experience, haven't we?
A little bit of gray hair. A little bit of gray hair.
I can't even imagine those going into your class because, you know, right, they always have that saying, you know, those who teach are the people who didn't do it, you know, like, or, you know, music critics, failed band musicians, food critics, failed chefs. Instead, with you, it's like, you know, who's this professor going to be teaching me? Oh, he's toured the world how many times?
I'm actually a doctor.
There you go.
I'm a doctor, yeah. I'm a doctor twice over. I was given two master's degrees.
That's awesome.
One by the University of Salford and one by the University of Preston. So, yeah, it's quite an honor to be. But, you know, I mean, again, it is quite simple. It's just that you're able to say, you know, when you're 21 and you're desperate to play and you're hungry, don't sign everything that everyone gives you.
Right.
Take your time. Never sign anything that's in perpetuity. And always get a lawyer to look it over. And if failing that, ask your mum and dad.
Right.
You know, it's actually, don't make the mistakes. The game that I have with my lawyer, where my lawyer shows me a piece of paper and I read it and I go, my God, what freaking idiot would sign that? And he turns it over and goes, it's you again, Peter. And I go, oh.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You know, when I die, there's going to be a hell of a lot of people making money off me in perpetuity.
Wow.
And it was supposed to be me kids.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, you live and learn, don't you, lads? But we're still here. We're still smiling.
Absolutely. So when the tour is over, let's talk about some of those issues.
Be a pleasure.
And Factory and Hacienda, all those great stories. Good luck on the rest of the tour. Thank you very much for coming
on
today.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you at last, lads.
Yeah, we love you. Enjoy Canada.
We'll see you Monday in Detroit.
Wonderful. I'll look forward to it.
Great. Wonderful.
Thanks.
Bye.
All the best.
Bye-bye. Good luck.
Well, there he is, Peter Hook and the Light, Monday in Detroit. Royal Oak Music Theater.
One word, legend.
Oh, absolutely.
Like absolute music legend there.
He is inducted.
He's inspired so many people, you know, with both, you know, New Order, Joy Division, unbelievable.
He is inducted. I'm giddy. He is inducted in the UK Music Hall of Fame. I bring up the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame only because it's a sore spot for me. I mean, I've been there. I've seen they have like a display, but they have a display for how great and influential they were, but just not enough of the votes, right, to get them involved. So we're going to have them back. We're going to talk about the great stories of the Hacienda, which, you know, for those in North America who don't know, the Hacienda was actually where acid house was actually invented and developed.
Yep.
Along with raves were invented there, and along with drug culture.
Absolutely out of control. Like, one of the greatest movies is 24 Hour Party People.
Sure.
And some of the stories that are portrayed in that movie.
Correct. And so you know, we want to talk to him about that. And of course, just all the screw ups, right? Yeah. All the people who took advantage of Joy Division, took advantage of New Order and their money and their music. But that's why Peter's out on the road. Hookie's doing it. He's enjoying it. So good for him.
Yep. More power to him.
Absolutely.
More power to you, buddy.
I this is it. This is it. I too am giddy. He's been a longtime hero, so it's great to have him on and talking about his career. Anyway, Peter Hook and the Light. See you, buddy.
See you, amigo. Be good.